You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to follow the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com. Tell them Locked On sent you. Today's episode, as promised, even amidst Miami's looming matchup against the Milwaukee Bucks, one that I grow increasingly positive about, to be honest with you. I'm liking Miami's chances, to paraphrase Bam Adebayo, but we wanted to talk a little bit about a well-deserving fixture in Heat history, Chris Bosch. Joined by Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors to talk about Chris's career. It's a great conversation and one that spans his tenure in Toronto, how that's viewed by the public at large, why voters may have held that against him in the voting process. Of course, memories of him with the Heat and his unfortunate end of his career, one that has since bounced back so that he's reconnected with the team and all is well again. And of course, how he'll be remembered just at large, just as a great player, a person on and off the court too, one who embraced Miami Heat culture and South Florida culture. Just a great conversation split up into a couple parts. So here is our tribute to Chris Bosch.
All right, it's Sean Woodley here from Locked On Raptors, as well as David Ramil of Locked On Heat, here for a little crossover action to talk about newly minted, or I guess soon to be minted in 2021, National Basketball Hall of Fame. I guess it's not the it's just the Basketball Hall of Fame, the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame, whatever the hell the name of the Hall of Fame is. Chris Bosch is going into it, and of course, Chris Bosch spent his 13-year NBA career with the Miami Heat and the Toronto Raptors. And so figured a little Heat-Raptors crossover action was due. Dave Ramil, how's it going, man? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. You know, still in the midst of trying to cover this terrible, wonderful season and seeing what happens with Miami. But at least a bit of good news, because I honestly was not quite sure that Chris would be able to get into the Hall of Fame. And it was an interesting debate. Now, I know how I felt about the subject, and I'm sure that you will get into it much more throughout the show. But it was just, I thought they were going to question his level of success and various stops and different things that he's done throughout his career. But it's good to see him, because I think he is absolutely deserving. And it kind of changes the conversation about what kind of criteria they're using to elect people into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think it was Tom Ziller over the weekend, and excuse me if I'm mentioning the wrong person here, but I think it was Tom Ziller who kind of pointed out that it's a good thing that the Basketball Hall of Fame is inclusive and is not exactly like turning its nose up at very, very good players. And, you know, it's happy to welcome in players whose names are absolutely part of the story of basketball, even if they aren't like the god tier best player on a championship team level players. And Chris Bosch obviously falls into that. He was the third best player on a championship team. He was the best player on, you know, some pretty okay Raptors teams and some pretty bad ones as well that, I don't know, varying degrees of his fault. Not really his fault at all, actually, but, and we'll get to that. But it is nice that the Basketball Hall of Fame, I think, is willing to like honor its history as opposed to baseball, where it's like, yeah, that guy was really great. He had like 490 home runs, but he didn't have 10 more, but he's not in. Sorry, Carlos Delgado, you're not getting in the another Toronto Miami guy. You know, you're not getting in the Hall of Fame. Sorry, dude. It's so precious and becomes such a, like a squawking match with every Hall of Fame debate every year. And I'm glad that's not really the case in basketball. It seems to be becoming even more so that way. You know, now that we got Chris Webber and Ben Wallace and guys like that getting in the league, guys who would never be considered, you know, even like one of the 10 best players alive at a given time. That's totally fine. You can't tell the history of basketball without those guys. And so hell yeah, put them in. And I mean, I'm sure this will also apply to like Kyle Lowry down the line. You know, I'm fully Kyle Lowry's a Hall of Famer, and stop it. You can't tell the story of 2010's basketball without him. But, you know, that's going to be for another time. We're talking about Chris Bosch today. So, David, I want to start with just sort of the Raptors era, I suppose, and flip it to you first. You know, obviously, Chris Bosch comes to Miami after 7 years in Toronto. you, I'm sure, saw Chris Bosch from sort of a distance. You know, this is maybe even before like League Pass really kicked in, so I'm not even sure how much you got to see him. What were your impressions of Chris Bosch as a player before he got to Miami? And were you like expecting to get like this superstar level player? Like, did you have preconceived notions because he was in Toronto and the Raptors were not exactly amazing? What was your early impression of Chris Bosch pre-Miami days?
Well, I think like a lot of people watching basketball at that point in time, and obviously not covering the league in any way, shape, or form at that point in time, my feeling was that there was no way of categorizing Chris that seemed appropriate. Like, he didn't feel like a center. He didn't feel like a four. He was somewhere in between. And I think I still have a lot of those, not necessarily preconceived notions, but just those kind of set in stone ideas of what a center should be, even at that point early on in Chris's career, where I was still thinking, oh, it's a guy who plays with the back to the basket. I mean, in Miami, think about the first 3 or 4 years of Chris's career, we had Shaquille O'Neal here, you know, then we had Alonzo Mourning before that, and even during alongside Shaquille O'Neal. So there was always a more traditional center playing in Miami for a long time. That just seemed like the kind of teams that Pat Riley always liked to build, with Alonzo and then Patrick Ewing in New York, and of course Kareem in Los Angeles. So it just felt like that was the way that a center should be. And so I kind of fit into that same mode of just not knowing exactly how to register Chris's game. Like, obviously he was getting the kind of attention and individual accolades that felt deserving. Like, I never questioned the All-Star selections so much, maybe because I just didn't care as much as I did would wind up caring later on once I started covering the game. But for Chris, it seemed like, well, he was a potent scorer. And then you hear some of the criticism about him being, you know, somewhat soft because he takes 18-foot jumpers or 15-footers and he doesn't exactly play the way a center does. And so I'm kind of concerned when I hear that he's coming to Miami, although clearly he's recognized as one of the top 20 players in the game, even in 2010. And I think his impact only grew from that point. So I did have some, not necessarily issue, but I think I just didn't know how to really accept what Chris was as a player until I got a chance to see him much more closely in Miami.
That's interesting because, you know, I feel like Raptors fans kind of didn't really appreciate what Chris Bosch was during his time either. And even afterwards, you know, I was kind of going back today and like watching old clips, and I watched his return to Toronto with the Heat, and he gets booed. And yeah, I think that's like a perfect sort of encapsulation of just like the totally out of whack narrative of Chris Bosch in Toronto. I mean, this is a guy who's drafted in 2003 into a brewing shitstorm, frankly, with Vince Carter already kind of on the outs. You know, they had just, I believe, that year gone on a run in the final part of the season with Vince injured, and they win like 14 of 15 to close the season without him, get into the playoffs, give the Pistons a run for 5 games. And that's kind of the beginning of the, oh, maybe they don't actually need Vince thing. And of course, you know, within the next couple of years, you have the him not dunking anymore, him getting traded to the Nets for nothing. And Chris Bosch is just there for that. And then if you look at just the team building over the course of the time Bosch was in Toronto, yeah, there were the couple nice years where Brian Colangelo hit on like Jose Calderon and Jorge Garbajosa and Anthony Parker and all these Euro guys who came over. But other than those like three moves, all the other team building moves are garbage and set Chris Bosch up to fail. Like, you look at the draft history of the Raptors from 2004 on, like they draft Bosch in 2003 with the 4th overall pick. And then the next year they take Rafael Araujo at 8 when Andre Iguodala is sitting right there. The following year they take Charlie Villanueva at 7, which, hey, he was a good rookie for them. They traded for TJ Ford, not so bad. But then Joey Graham at 16 when Danny Granger is sitting right there. And then they take Bargnani with the 1st overall pick in 2006. They don't have a pick in 2007 because I believe they traded it away for TJ Ford, if I'm not mistaken, in addition to Charlie Villanueva. And then, and I could be wrong on who they traded that first round pick, but they traded that first round pick away. Then they trade Roy Hibbert in the draft for Jermaine O'Neal. That all goes to crap very quickly. And then the last pick they make before Bosch leaves is DeMar DeRozan, who in his rookie season was only going to do so much. And so, you know, all of that, the team building, the moves that just didn't work out, paying Jason Capono a ton of money, like, it's totally unsurprising that things didn't go
the way that they should have. And I think that whole soft brand on him was kind of amplified by the fact that in his final season, he gets injured, I think, in like game 68 or something like that, and doesn't come back. He kind of sits it out. The Raptors end up missing the playoffs by like a game or two. There's this whole sort of chorus of, oh, he should probably, he could have maybe come back and played, but maybe he's preserving himself for free agency or whatever. And it's like, okay, yeah, maybe he was doing some self-preservation. Why wouldn't he on a team that was at best a 500 team? And also, if you were worried about that being the case, Brian Colangelo had the opportunity to trade him before his final season when they couldn't sign him to an extension and chose not to because he's Brian Colangelo and he's bad at his job. And so this whole, like, Chris Bosh quit on the Raptors, Chris Bosh is this, like, soft player is just kind of insane. He was the only shining light in addition to a couple other flashes from like Jose Calderon and TJ Ford during that run. And like, there was only so much he could do. And I'll never begrudge him for leaving. And the more sort of distance you get and the more you kind of understand just how badly managed that era of the Raptors was, having seen now 8 years of good management, it's like, yeah, he would have been a fool to stay, honestly. And that's the whole narrative around him is silly. The fact that he got booed when he came back, you know, yes, I get it. The Heatles were booed everywhere that year, but you know, Chris Bosh was the best player on the team for 7 years, or you know, six of his 7 years even. And for him to kind of get a raw deal, and I think now is sort of misremembered in Raptors history as not one of the greats. It's pretty unfortunate, but I'm hoping like the next year of sort of retrospectives looking back will kind of change things. And by the time the Hall of Fame comes around next year, you know, it's back to full appreciation. But it's certainly, you know, it's not always been smooth with Raptors fans and Chris Bosh, which is unfortunate because Chris Bosh did nothing but score a ton of points, average 23-10 for 5-6 years, and drag some very, very sad sack supporting casts to, you know, in a couple cases, modest success or, you know, something bordering on it. So.
Right. Well, yeah. I, you know, a couple of things, you know, stood out there. One, I had no idea, even now as you're talking about it, I just kind of recollecting everything. There is a number of different connections here between the Heat and Raptors, not to mention Alonzo Mourning. I didn't even think about it as I was talking about him. He's probably not very popular in the Toronto area, right? I would imagine.
I do an annual ranking of all the Raptors in Raptors history, and Alonzo Mourning is always, even though he didn't play a game for the team, he
wouldn't
is always
playing a game for
last.
The team. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 And look, it kind of ties into what you're saying. Like at that time, like Alonzo, I remember not thinking, oh, he's not wrong. I mean, maybe I was somewhat biased because it was Alonzo Mourning, but I remember thinking, like, why would a player at that point in time in his respective career, having come back from, you know, debilitating, life-threatening kidney injury, ironically enough, and then wind up, you know, he wanted to join a contender. The Nets fell short of that goal, and why would he want to go to a team like Toronto that at that time was so bad? Like, in fact, you know, kind of playing exactly what you were saying, like they were just not building a team very well. They were not a very good team, and obviously they traded their very best player, Vince Carter, to the Nets in exchange for, well, what would have been Alonzo Mourning. But there's Alonzo, and then you mentioned Jason Capono as well, who probably got a big contract based on his success in Miami playing alongside Shaquille O'Neal. And then you mentioned Jermaine O'Neal, who we traded Sean Marion to Toronto in exchange for O'Neal, right? So there's some interesting connections there during the aughts. I had totally forgotten about all those the strange ties between the two franchises here. Stay tuned for part two of my conversation with Sean as we go on our tribute to Chris Bosh. But first, let me tell you a little bit about rockauto.com. It's so impossible to get the parts that you need by getting going to a chain storefront and you ask questions there. They don't know what you're looking for. They ask you questions. It's this back and forth. It gets uncomfortable. And then you wind up feeling like maybe you overpaid for the part that you didn't necessarily need in the first place. Why go through all that? You've got access to computers with the same access to the same parts that they have. Right now, if you go to rockauto.com, navigate their easy-to-use site, you'll find everything you need for your car or truck quickly and easily, and you get it delivered directly and safely to your door. You can't beat that. And of course, you save money because rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody. So if you go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, then you go to the section that says, how'd you hear about us? And write the phrase locked on so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com. You you know, it's kind of interesting because we're kind of tying it all back and the criteria for the Hall of Fame. Like, you know, it's so interesting to me that he's the one. The biggest criticism, I think, is, well, his role wasn't big enough in Miami. And they won a lot, though. Obviously, they won championships, and he was a great player here. But then when he was putting up the numbers, it's like, oh, well, he wasn't responsible for enough team success. And it's like this kind of lack of context. That's why I thought it was going to be held against him when he was enshrined in the Hall of Fame. I didn't think he would get picked this year, or maybe it would take a couple years before he was recognized, because it's like it changes that criteria. It's like, well, what do you want? You want him to put up 25 points per game on a team that wins, you know, 25 to 30 games per season? Or do you want him to be the second or third best player on a championship level team?
Yeah. And also, like, I feel like had the Raptors been put together more competently during that time in Toronto, like, there would have been more team success. He had the year where they went 47-35 and he was outstanding. His final season with the team, I mean, they finished 40-42 basically entirely because of him. Like, that's the year, like, they go back to back years. 08-09, they bring in Jermaine O'Neal and it goes horribly. As you said, the Sean Marion trade happens, and like the back half of that season is a complete joke. And then 2009-10 happens, and they bring in Hedo Turkoglu, who is fat and out of shape from day one and hates it from day one and is just dragging down the vibe of the team. Like, of course Chris Bosh was not going to drag that team to much success. It was a deadweight roster with a lot of very, very bad players and, like, a couple of nice contributors. But, you know, there's number one options. Like, you could still have him be the number one option and have, like, competent players around him. They probably would have won, you know, 48 games a season or something like that. It's just the roster construction was so horrible. And I also think this other thing happens too, and this, you know, I was kind of guilty of this last year when I was on contract with raptors.com. I was writing this was during the pandemic, and so instead of writing, like, features and stuff with the access I had to do, like, retrospective stuff. And I did a bracket of the best individual single game Raptors performances in history. And it was kind of wild how little Chris Bosh appeared in that bracket. I think I picked 32 different games. I think I only had one Bosh game. And it's kind of like he was done in by how consistently awesome he was without being terribly flashy. It's sort of like a LaMarcus Aldridge thing almost, where it's like, oh yeah, that guy's amazing. His numbers are ludicrous. He's kind of like a revolutionary big man the way he's shooting. Obviously, the three-point shooting didn't really come until Miami, but, you know, still stretching it out to 18 feet was not a thing a lot of bigs did. And, you know, he just did it in such like a calm, cool, unsexy way that it didn't lend itself to a lot of those like insane like 15 rebounds, 5 assist games or anything like that. He just just another 30 and 12. Oh, another 28 and 14. Oh, another 30 and 15. Like, it was just so metronomic almost that it almost kind of, it's hard to find those standout moments. And also, I mean, those standout moments would have come had the team not been a nightmare and had, you know, gotten to the playoffs and weren't getting, you know, pasted by the Magic in round one. Like, those things would have come if the team hadn't sort of let him down around him. But then, of course, he goes to Miami, and that's, I guess, where you kind of get to see him every single day. What were your sort of impressions in those early Heat years? You know, this is, I'm going to rely on you a lot for this because, you know, because of how poorly the Raptors were run and how the Bosh thing went, I kind of fell out of love with the team and the sport, honestly, for a couple years. Like, I went to the first post-Bosh game in Toronto, and it was also against the Cavs, and they didn't have LeBron anymore. And it was such a depressing game that I was just like, you know what? I'm good for a couple years. And it wasn't till like 2013 that I got back in on the team. So I kind of missed the heights of Chris Bosh in Miami, and it's a shame. Going back and watching clips today, it was like, oh man, like, this is great. And look at how revolutionary he is as like a center, just flying around, blocking Danny Green in the corner in game 6 of the finals. Like, what was your experience watching Chris Bosh and seeing him kind of move into the role he kind of occupied on those very good title-winning teams?
Well, so much of it changed, and it went so quickly, like, in the short span of the Big Three Heatles era. I mean, it was 4 seasons, right? So it doesn't seem like it's much even when you're talking about it now. But even within the context of those seasons, like, his role changed. He was brought in as what many expected to be as a power forward, with LeBron at the 3 and then Dwayne at the 2. And then anybody really at the 1 or 5, like, they started so many bad players at either the center or point guard position, you know, that it's kind of funny to go back to his names. Like, Heat Twitter and Heat fans in general, just look back at all those centers. You had Eric Dampier, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Dexter Pittman, Joel Anthony, Canada's own.
You better
Joel
watch
Anthony.
Your ass, call, hey, call Joel Anthony, Anthony bad.
I love Joel Anthony. I'll tell this story now for your Canadian fans there, because I saw Joel Anthony at a Target. I don't know if you know Target in Canada or mm-hmm. not, but mm-hmm. okay. Well, I saw him at a Target like when he first joined the team. Like this was fresh out of UNLV. He had just been in summer league and he got like a contract in Miami. And of course, he's got to go shopping for like housewares, like because he's living in an apartment here and he's walking around Target. Nobody knows who the guy is. And I'm just like freaking out there with my fiance, now my wife, and we're just kind of looking at Joel Anthony. And I'm like nervous to even go and talk to him because it's Joel freaking Anthony and nobody even gives a damn except for me. So it's just hilarious. But yeah, so there were a number of not great, let's say, centers at that point in time. And Chris was at the four. But I remember even during that first season, when you're kind of feeling the buzz of the big three and everything else, like the Miami Herald was listing like their individual scores and statistics on a nightly basis. Like they had a column in the sports section that listed LeBron's statistics, Dwayne's statistics, and Chris's there because they were so responsible for almost all of Miami's offense. They were averaging, I think, like almost 75 to 80 points per game between the three of them because they were just dominating everything. And that was what the expectation was. It didn't matter who the 1 and 5 were because you had these big three players. And then, of course, in that first season, he's phenomenal. And everybody kind of forgets this when they lose the championship to the Mavericks. But Chris was great in the NBA Finals. Like the Heat lost the finals because of LeBron James through and through. That he just fell apart, didn't know how to handle the pressure in Dallas. I'm not sure if he was comfortable with his role playing kind of the secondary ball creator or your shot creator there on offense to Dwayne. Dwayne took over. Chris was phenomenal. LeBron cost the Heat the finals in 2011 for sure. And then the next year, things kind of change. There's that lockout too, right? So the lockout kind of shortens the season. And then in year two of the big three experiment, you know, they bring in Shane Battier and he plays a lot more at the four, kind of coming off the bench. You know, he's also a 3-4 at times because he lets LeBron kind of not have to guard the bigger player to save the wear and tear there. And Chris is kind of somewhere floating there in that role where he kind of comes in and plays a lot at the five, but not necessarily. You still have Joel Anthony or somebody starting alongside of him. Udonis Haslem was getting a lot of minutes too. So it's like the front court was very, very weird at that point in time. And then slowly but surely you see Chris's evolution into a floor spacing big. And it's just, he's so good at it. Like it seems almost seamless. But I remember even during those first, I think it was the 2012 finals run where he has to come back from injury and then he winds up just being really, really good at stretching the floor. Like you see, you always see the 18-foot jumper being so smooth and fluid. And then all of a sudden he's able to take it from 18 to 23 feet like nothing. And it's just like, well, this is just the next evolution for him. And he's so good at it. And he becomes a legitimate 3-point shooting weapon on a team that really, really needed. And then from that point forward, you know, a lot of it is attributed to Eric Spoelstra, but of course we see little bits and pieces around the league for many years, even before that, but the kind of the positionless basketball that Spo embraces becomes possible because of Chris Bosh. Like his versatility as a defender and as a scoring option on offense just allows Spo to use those kind of positionless lineups where you have Chris at the five and you can do things with Battier or Ray Allen or whomever. Rashard Lewis was coming in there. He's playing a lot of minutes too at that point in time. So like Chris's versatility to see it on display and to see his evolution within such a short amount of span, it's a short amount of time. To me, it's like one of the most underrated aspects of his game and why I think he's such a great player, an unheralded great player, because like he was able to change it. And you know, players talk about this all the time. You try to incorporate things into your game. You try to add things during the offseason and you rarely see it kind of manifest so quickly. But from, you know, Chris's standpoint, he came in there as a four, left in 4 years he was a 3-point shooting center, and it's like you start to see this growth happen slowly but surely, and it's amazing to see to just think about Chris's impact and the way he evolved, the way the game evolves because of a player like him.
Yeah, I think it's Kirk Goldsberry who kind of throws around the refrain. You know, we talk about it being small ball these days, but it's not small ball. It's skill ball. And
right.
It just so happens that in a sport where the basket is 10 feet high, if you're 7 feet tall and skilled, that's going to be a lot better than if you're 6'2" and skilled, right? And so, you know, if you're looking at guys who affected the way the game is played and sort of informed what it looks like today, you know, I think you start probably with like Kevin Garnett, another Hall of Famer. I think you probably throw Draymond in there as well. And, sure. You know, obviously they're guards and stuff. Like Steph is a kind of different beast. But in terms of like the idea of going small and sort of changing the way your front court is oriented. Like, Bosch might be third behind those two guys in terms of changing the way things have been done. Like, maybe I'm missing somebody else, but, and like LeBron playing the four, I guess, is also kind of in there too. And it's all part and parcel with Bosch moving to the five. Right. But like, that is the prototype now. Like, if you can find a center who can block shots and score and defend, like, and is able to kind of track out to the perimeter, buddy, you're cooking. That's what you want. That is like what Evan Mobley is supposed to be in the draft this year. That's why people are going so crazy for him. And Bosch really is, I think, one of the first players to kind of introduce that. And again, it's another reason why, of course, he's a Hall of Famer. Like, he tangibly affected how the game is played for years and possibly like generations beyond. And that is pretty damn cool, and not exactly a thing a lot of people have a claim to. That obviously requires Eric Spoelstra to make that move and all that stuff, but most of it falls on Bosch for becoming adaptable and kind of changing the player he was entirely from what he was in Toronto, where he was not really seen as this great defender. Again, I don't know if that's entirely fair. Maybe he was out of position playing the four at his size, and you know, next to Andrea Bargnani, I'm not sure if you can really expect to be good defensively, right? So there's lots to sort of dig into there, but I think the way he kind of evolved over the course of the last decade is just remarkable and exactly the kind of stuff that Hall of Famers are made of. And then, of course, you get to the very unfortunate end of his career, where 2015-16, the Heat are like a good, fun team. Is that the year they trade for Dragic, or is that the year before?
It's a 2014-15. Like, they acquired him in February 2015, right at the trade deadline. And then the next day, we find out about Chris having his first bout with blood clots.
Right, right. And then he deals with the blood clots. He only plays 44 games that season. And the year after, he gets in for 53 games and then is once again out. And then that's the last we see of him, unfortunately. And that's just before that Raptors Heat second round series. It's such a great what if to me, as like what would have happened in that series if Bosch were available. Obviously, he wasn't the same player necessarily that he was the couple years prior, during his heyday. You know, his numbers were better, you know, just sort of counting wise. But obviously, he wasn't the same impact type player at 31 that he was at 26 or 27. But still a damn good player, and probably changes the complexion of that series with the Raptors quite a bit. Instead of watching the Hassan Whiteside, Jonas Valanciunas bowl for the first couple games, you know, Bosch is probably way more heavily involved. Is that like a what if for Heat fans? Like, if he were available in that series, do you think they pull that out and make that conference finals and probably get dismantled by LeBron in the conference finals like the Raptors did?
Oh, I don't know that they would have gone dismantled. Like, so much of what Miami was missing in between that and the Jimmy Butler era was, you know, we wish we had a floor spacing big or a more versatile defender. Like, eventually we got that with Bam Adebayo, but prior to that, you had the plodding Hassan Whiteside. Like, even in that series, remember Whiteside goes down. You remember who they started at the center position?
Justice Winslow. Yeah, okay.
As a rookie. You know, he's playing not quite Magic Johnson starting at center, but Justice Winslow playing the five. And it didn't work. Obviously, like, credit to Winslow for being a stout defender and trying his best, but it wasn't going to work. But if you've got Hassan there and he goes down for whatever reason, it's just a natural transition. You slide Bosch up. You put Winslow at the four where he's much more comfortable. You have other options. You have Luol Deng there. You have Josh McRoberts. You know, lots of different names there. But, you know, it's so much of what Miami could have done differently. Maybe Dwayne doesn't leave in 2016 if you've got Chris under contract, but that was such a bad summer. Like, 2016, not only do you lose Dwayne, but then there's this very public divorce with Chris Bosch where the team says, no, you can't come back. You've got a third conclusive test that you're going to, you know, test for blood clots. We're concerned about your health. And it seems publicly that they're doing it for Bosch's own good. Yet Chris Bosch and his wife are saying, no, I want to play. It's unfair of you. And they think they're going to challenge the team. It might come down to like a legal issue. And they start, you know, talking about the league bringing in other doctors and other opinions to verify whether or not the Heat are doing things in their own best interest. It's a very, very ugly, public, messy divorce. And this doesn't go very well. And so that year, 2016, was that year where the Heat starts off you know, going 10-31 and then finishing up 31-10. And, you know, it's a much more successful by the end of the year. But, you know, Chris could have made things so much better during those next couple of years. And then, of course, maybe you don't draft Bam. You know, maybe Hassan Whiteside doesn't get the kind of playing time that he gets. And he certainly wouldn't get the contract that he got if you've got Chris Bosh under contract. But yes, a huge what if. I mean, that year in particular, like, it would have been so good for Miami to be able to get that kind of confidence back, because, you know, 2014, LeBron leaves, and then immediately Pat Riley says, you know what, we're not going to just fall apart like the Cavs did. We're going to retool. We're going to rebuild. That's why they bring in a guy like Luol Deng. They bring in a guy like Josh McRoberts. Didn't get the kind of playing time that he does. Well, he should have, because he was hurt all the time. But he was seen as a guy who could compliment LeBron in 2014. And then, of course, LeBron leaves and didn't quite work out that way. But you kind of, you know, he wanted to retool and get a contender built as quickly as possible. And you were right there. That's why you swing the trade for Goran Dragic that first season, because you know, you get a point guard here who is clearly better than Mario Chalmers or Norris Cole or the other guys that were starting at that point in time. And then you've got Dragic, who's coming off the All-NBA season the year before, and it's a perfect fit alongside Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And you've got this young player, Hassan Whiteside, who's on a minimum veteran deal, and he's contributing quite a bit too, and it works out so well. And you're thinking to yourself, well, we've got something great here. And then, of course, Chris's injury just takes the wind out of everything, and it just changes the complexion of the team for the next couple of seasons. We'll be wrapping up our tribute to Chris Bosh in the next segment. But first, let me tell you about Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at Bet Online. But there's tons of sports action going around the world right now. The start of the new WNBA season. Of course, the NBA playoffs. Who wouldn't want to place a bet on the Miami Heat, the NHL, and so much more? Go head over to Bet Online. You're on your laptop or mobile device, and check out all the great sporting news that they have up there. Sign up bonuses, contest information, so much more. This is your opportunity. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Wrapping up my conversation with Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors as we continue our tribute to Hall of Fame legend Chris Bosh.
You don't even really realize, I mean, I didn't realize or remember, I guess, that he's only 31 in his final season. Like, that's insane. I for some reason, it was in my brain, like, oh, he was 34, 35, and, you know, maybe there wasn't a whole lot sort of that you missed out on in terms of prime years, but no.
He'd still be playing.
Yeah, he'd still be playing, and the skill set that he had probably would have aged pretty damn well, too, right?
Absolutely.
Especially as he refined the shooting, as he, you know, probably worked on the playmaking and stuff like that. You know, that was maybe the sort of one thing he never really got great at, was like the secondary playmaking, you know, passing out of post-ups and whatnot. Like, he was fine at it and had some good moments here and there, but I don't think it was necessarily his greatest strength. But, you know, as the game sort of evolved, you know, he absolutely still have a place in the league now. And the last few years, I mean, that's a guy who, you know, if he's on last year's Heat team, that's a different conversation you're having. If he's on previous editions of the Heat, if he's, you know, if he goes somewhere else, obviously, too, which was always, I guess, on the table as well. You know, he was always kind of flirting with Houston and Dallas and whatnot. You know, those possibilities were out there, too. And there were more good. There were like five more good Chris Bosh years now that I'm looking at it and sort of realizing how young he was. And I guess you kind of forget that he came into the league as a baby. Like, he was super young when he got drafted out of Georgia Tech. And he, you know, he's kind of in that same draft class with LeBron where everyone seems ageless. And it's just because they got like a 2-year head start before their 20s started to get into the NBA. Yeah, it makes me a little wistful, no doubt, for the years we didn't get of Chris Bosh, because he was a delight and I think only would have continued to further his value in today's NBA. I'm glad that he seems like he's got this like burgeoning media career. It was always a thing he seemed like he'd be good at. He was always a good interview. He was always a good quote. You know, I was watching back today, the video that he did when he was trying to get to the All-Star game in 2008 for New Orleans. And he was like dressed up like a cowboy at a car dealership. And like, this guy's just gregarious and fun and cool. And, you know, I know he was doing TV during the Raptors finals run and stuff like that as well. Is he kind of still involved in Miami? Are you seeing him quite a bit? Or, you know, does he kind of pop in and out? Or is that sort of marriage with the team still soured from the way things ended with the injury stuff?
No, luckily, that seems like it's been repaired. His jersey's been retired, luckily, which, you know, I'm sure some fans are probably laughing because it might not mean much because Michael Jordan's jersey was retired by the team, too. But that was a mistake probably on Pat Riley's part. But anyway. I'm sorry. Did you know about this? The Jordan jersey retirement?
I think I knew about this, but maybe it's not at the top of my mind, but it sounds hilarious.
Basically, he was just saying, you know, the game will never be the same because it was impacted by Michael Jordan, because he was coaching the Knicks, and because even the Heat lost to Jordan and the Bulls so many times. He just said, you know, the number 23 will never be worn again. You know, whatever. It was a ridiculous tribute to a player that just crushed them routinely. So I'm not sure exactly if it worked out the way he wanted it to, but anyway,
let's hang up daddy's jersey, please.
So Chris, yeah, his jersey's retired. He was around a lot. He's been around a few times here and there. I think he mostly supports Miami, but I think he's living out in Los Angeles now, so he's not quite a fixture at the American Airlines Arena. Well, of course, nobody's been over the last couple of seasons, so it doesn't really matter. But, you know, I think the relationship's been repaired, and the Heat issued a statement. Eric Spoelstra talked about Bosch's impact and everything else like that. So I think they're fully aware of how impactful he's been as a player and everything else. But yeah, to your point, like if he had stayed, like maybe he and Dwayne retire at the same time. Can you imagine that? It would have been an incredible season just to witness those two great players there. And maybe to have another run at a finals at some point. We wouldn't even be debating if he was a Hall of Famer, if they could have found a way to win a championship at some point in the later part of his career, or if he had gotten another ring somewhere. It would have been an interesting conversation, because obviously now team success is viewed as an important part of the defining characteristic of a Hall of Famer, I guess. So, I don't know. He's such a fun player, right? Like he embraced Miami culture so quickly. Like I remember him talking Spanish and talking about, you know, Cuban coffee and liking it and wanting to embrace like the culture of South Florida and the Latino culture down here. And he was just a big part of that. He always seemed so gregarious and funny. Like there was always the Bosch moments in post-game interviews where he would just kind of pop up and like pop up behind LeBron or Dwayne or everything like that. He was always like just a good natured guy. And I think Heat fans absolutely love him. They hated the messy divorce aspect of it, but they never resented him or held anything against him at any point in time because of, you know, the injury and everything else. But before that, even like, you think back, if they don't win in 2012, the second year of the Big Three era, there was a very realistic possibility that Chris Bosh would have been traded. Like you can't trade Dwayne. Certainly not going to trade LeBron. And so who becomes most expendable is Chris Bosh. So luckily they win in 2012, and he winds up having, you know, a few more really good years in Miami. But it's such an interesting career that ended far too short.
You're jogging my memory now on a reason why I think Raptors fans still kind of hold some, I don't know if it's contempt, but maybe he's not quite as beloved as a lot of other guys. Because the last decade, we've seen a lot of Raptors really embrace the city. And Toronto, I think, has gone from being this sort of, you know, foreign country backwater to being like, oh, no, Toronto rocks.
To the north, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like everyone who plays in Toronto now is like, no, I want to stay here. It's amazing. Right. Love it, except for Kawhi, but that's fine. Like it's I think, kind of shed the stigma. But Bosch, I had some comments about how, like, I can't watch ESPN in Canada and stuff like that. I don't know how much I don't think that played into his decision-making necessarily, the channels he was able to watch. But I do think that the Raptors fan base is particularly ornery when it comes to stuff like that. And so I bet that's also part of why maybe there isn't the sort of adoration for him that there is for a DeMar DeRozan, for example, or obviously Kyle Lowry and other guys. Before we wrap here, man, this has been great. I've loved talking about Chris Bosh, but I have a game for you. Are you ready for a game?
Okay, always.
Okay. So on Locked On Raptors, I do this game called That Random Raptors Game, where I pick a game from Raptors history, and my guest has to guess who played in the game for the Raptors. It gets rather depressing sometimes because I usually pick something from like the Chris Bosh era, for example. And I'm doing that here as well. So instead of having you pick the Raptors who played in the game, because that would be an impossible task, I'm going to have you guess which Miami Heat players played in this specific game. And we'll remember some guys and talk about Chris Bosh a little bit more. So the game I've chosen here is a game in the final season of Chris Bosh in Toronto. The Raptors beat the Heat 120-113 on November 20th, 2009. The Raptors moved to 6-7. The Heat moved to 7-5 with the loss. The Miami Heat played 10 players in this game. Name those 10 players. I'll give you Chris Bosh's line as well. Really good game from him. 35 minutes, 29 points, 12 boards, 10 of 14 shooting, 9 of 13 from the line, a plus 6, 4 blocks as well. Just one of those classic, doesn't stand out, doesn't pop, but holy crap, Chris Bosh was good every single night type of games. But for the Miami Heat, I want to subject you to this torture. So there's 10 guys. Name the 10 players. Usually I give 3 strikes, so if you get them wrong, we'll just finish off all the names from there. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, 2009-10 season, right? So yes. Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne Wade is correct. In this game, he played 41 minutes, 42 minutes, 30 points, 5 boards, 8 assists. He's very good at basketball.
He was.
Yeah. 1 out of 10.
Probably at MVP-level year for him, I think. So alongside Dwayne in the starting lineup, well, that was post-O'Neal, so... No, that was Jermaine O'Neal. He was on that team, right? They had just traded him. They had traded Sean Marion to Toronto for Jermaine O'Neal. So he was there for the 09-10 season.
You are correct. He played 33 minutes in the starting lineup, 17 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, and a minus 10. 2 for 2.
Okay. Okay. Michael Beasley.
Yes. Oh, Beast. Super cool Beast. Started, played 40 minutes, 21-12 on 8 of 18 shooting. It was a minus 12, but who really cares about plus minus when you're Michael Beasley? Okay. 3 for 3.
Well, I'm now starting to get worried because I cannot recall. I cannot recall anybody else. Okay, I know Mario Chalmers probably played.
Yep, he played and he played quite well. 38 minutes, 30 points, 9 of 15, 5 of 9 from deep as well, with 3 assists to go along with it.
But he didn't start, right? I don't think he
did start. He was the starting point guard in this game, yeah.
So who was the backup at that point? Was it Carlos Arroyo?
It was Carlos Arroyo. He played 13 minutes, 4 points, 2 assists. You're killing it, man. 5 out of 5.
Yeah. My good luck's bound to end at some point. Let's see. Wow. Well, Udonis would have played, too. At that point,
Udonis Haslem did not play in this game. Did not dress for this game. Must have been injured or something.
Oh man. Okay. James Jones.
James Jones started, played 34 minutes, 5 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, plus 10 to lead the team. So you got the starting five. You got 4 bench guys left. One of whom, I'll give you a hint. We mentioned him earlier today when you were talking about a certain department store.
Joel Anthony, absolutely.
Yes, Joel Anthony, 15 minutes, 2.7 boards, an absolute king. He now coaches for a team in the city in which I live. It's lovely, the Hamilton Honey Badgers. He's an assistant coach there.
Really?
Anyway, 3 guys left. Yeah, he's just walking around the sidelines being tall as hell is basically his vibe. you got 3 guys left. If you get these 3 guys, I'll be totally shocked and impressed.
I cannot even begin to warrant a guess. Let's see. Probably a little thin up front. I cannot even recall who might have been out. No, Eddie Jones had retired by that point. This is no Gary Payton, no Alonzo Mourning. I'm trying to remember the names. That era was.
I think there's
really
a guy. I think one of these guys won a 3-point contest at some point.
Oh, Daquan Cook?
Daquan Cook, yes. Not such a hot 3-point shooting game for him. 13 minutes, 4 points, 0 of 3 from deep. Minus 17 as well, a team worst, minus 17.
Wow, okay.
You got 2 guys left.
I cannot. I will not. Okay. I mean, if you could give me a hint if you like to. But
yeah, I'll give you one hint. One guy I could not give you a hint about, but another guy, he has a brother who's currently in the NBA.
Wow.
Plays for a Western Conference team. Got traded this year.
Oh,
traded a lot lately.
Yeah, Darrell Wright.
Darrell Wright, yeah. He played 5 minutes, didn't score, only had 2 rebounds. But shouts to Darrell Wright. And the last guy is Shavleek Randolph, baby.
Oh, man. Shavleek Randolph. How could I forget him?
No points, 4 boards in 8 minutes. The two guys who were DNP CDs were Yakuba Diawara. I've never heard of this person in my life.
Yes,
and Raptors legend, still Raptors legend, currently on the sidelines for the Raptors, Jamal McGlure, the big cat.
Oh, the big cat.
Also on the bench.
Oh, what a wow. Cat. Yeah, I knew there was a center in there somewhere, but I could not have remembered McGlure's one season with Miami. Wow, that was bad.
Yeah, and then just to highlight just how bereft Chris Bosh's supporting cast was here, actually not the worst collection of guys in this game, I guess. You had a nice game from Bargnani, 24-10. I think this was during Andrea Bargnani's like couple dalliances with being competent. Jose Calderon, Hedo Turkoglu, who's terrible, DeMar DeRozan as a rookie, and then off the bench you got Jarrett Jack, who they brought in to try to keep Chris Bosh around because they were Georgia Tech buds. Amir Johnson in the early days, Marco Bellinelli, Pops Mensah-Bonsu, and Sonny Weems, with Patrick O'Bryant and Rasha Nesterovic getting DNP CDs.
Nesterovic, oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just ugly.
Yeah, this team, yeah, they were 40-42. Probably overshot what they should have been, honestly. What a nightmare.
Imagine bringing Jarrett Jack in to keep your star player happy. That's just unbelievable.
It's startling to me that Brian Colangelo didn't have success in his later stops in the NBA.
Yeah, good point.
This is just before he, a couple of years before he'd throw an offer sheet at Landry Fields just to coerce the Knicks out of signing Steve Nash at 38. Good stuff, Brian Colangelo. Playing checkers while everyone else is playing chess, but he thinks he's playing chess. That's going to do it, man. This was a delight. Far better than the 2009-10 Toronto Raptors roster was. And really glad we could chat about Chris Bosh. It went a little long, but that's fine with me. Chris Bosh deserves the time.
Thank you so much for listening. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please follow the show and leave a review. Special thanks to all of our sponsors for supporting today's show. And thanks to all of you. I'm David Ermil, signing off for now.